Welcome everyone to our first sustainability podcast. Today we are talking with Daniel Noriega, a management and engineering consultant at the OAS, who takes on many roles, including that of a sustainability officer. Welcome, Daniel, to the podcast.
Thank you, Maya, for having me, and hello to all people that will be listening on the podcast.
So to start things off, let's talk about your role at the OAS and the role of sustainability officers more broadly. So at PADF, we do not have a sustainability officer, but we do have some individuals who work on sustainability topics. For those who might not know, what is the role of a sustainability officer and why are they needed at organizations?
Okay, I think to begin, we can talk about the general concept. So the mission of a sustainability officer is to understand the organization's metabolism and take the necessary actions to mitigate the organization's impact. So the role of a sustainability officer is very diverse and depends on the sector in which it's involved. Cement companies, a US-based nonprofit like PDF, and a multilateral organization like the OAS do not have the same metabolism. That's an important thing to note.
Okay. I like this metaphor of metabolism. So like in a human being, the metabolism refers to the process of turning our inputs, like food and water, into energy for our bodies to use. So in this context, can you explain a bit more what you mean by an organization's metabolism?
Yes, and you're right. That organizations are like living things. And in order for an organization to fulfill its purpose, it needs different inputs, such the energy that you use in the buildings, the paper that you use on the photocopies, on the fuel that you use by cars. So all that inputs are very important. And the sum of all these give the consumption of the organization. So a standardized way to an organization to measure their metabolism is to calculate the tons of CO2 emissions. So just like human bodies, it is not healthy to eat poor quality food or to eat too much food. It's much about consuming healthy food in a reasonable amount. It's the same way with organization. There needs to be a healthy amount of consumption to drive metabolism, but not too much because then there is excessive waste. So organizations need to be aware of how many tons of CO2 emission they are generating so they can start to mitigate their impact.
Okay. Yeah, I got that. Thank you. That's a really helpful explanation. And I want to touch on something you just mentioned. You said at the end, mitigation of impact. Can you like provide some more details about what mitigation looks like?
Yes, and you can think in mitigation as the constant monitoring and evaluation of the steps that are being taken to achieve a healthy metabolism. So if we continue to our example, it's like people deciding how to take care of themselves, taking vacations, if I go into the gym, what kind of food I will decide to eat. This in many ways is the most exciting part of a sustainability officer role, no? Today, we live in a context which people are highly conscious of the climate crisis. So usually people have a positive outlook towards the initiative we propose. So the key thing here is more about how to communicate these programs to all the staff.
Okay, no, this is super helpful. Okay, so for our audience, I just want to summarize the two ideas you've mentioned up to this point, right? So first, we have an organization, just like PADF, that has a metabolism created by inputs like electricity and fuel, paper, like our technology use, things like that. And then the second idea is that an organization's consumption produces waste and we need to monitor that waste and not only just monitor it, but mitigate the CO2 emissions that we're creating from the consumption. Okay, so now if we can, I'm curious to turn a little bit more to the bigger picture here, because we've been talking about organizations. I want to talk about the Paris Agreement, the 2015 Paris Agreement, which made it really clear that globally we need to remain below 2 degrees Celsius and ideally really 1.5 degrees Celsius of global warming if we want to prevent the worst disasters of climate change. This past summer, the IPCC report that came out said that in 2020, we had already reached 1.1 degrees of global warming since pre-industrialization. So that's pretty clear evidence that we're running out of time to act. And typically, when we think about this really ambitious goal, we think about the role of national governments and nationally determined contributions to limit CO2 emissions, like not organizations like ours. So given the context, right, why are sustainability officers needed at nonprofits like PADF or at multilaterals like the OAS? when our impact is nowhere close to the national emissions of an entire country.
Yes, and you're talking here about the key point. So we can see this in different ways. Like in a general approach, the main reason is that all companies and organizations, so we have a role to play tackling climate change. So the data regarding global warming is definitive in that every degree of preventing warming makes the difference. So for that reason, we have the responsibility to adjust the organizations to be as sustainable as possible. And the role of ourselves as sustainability officers are essential here because we establish the plan that integrates science-based targets for emission reduction. That's on the general approach. On another more specific approach, which goes from the standpoint of each individual organization. So for example, one of the four central pillars of the OES is the integral development of the countries in the Americas, which means that we as promoters of sustainable development must start setting an example. What we promote must be consistent with what we do. In that sense, my role is to ensure that our operation and practices are consistent with the mission of achieving sustainable development in the Americas.
This is great. No, this is great, Daniel. Thank you. And, you know, I'm maybe a little biased, but I agree. I agree that every organization like ours have a role to play in this. You know, at PADF, we believe in creating a hemisphere that is more healthy and peaceful, just and inclusive, resilient and sustainable for current and future generations. And I believe that that includes leading by example and making a commitment to mitigate our CO2 emissions. And I'm actually very happy to report that on December 1st, PADF formally joined the Climate Accountability in Development Collective, which commits us to becoming fully accountable for our emissions by 2025 and reducing our emissions 30% by 2030. So that's ambitious, that's big. And in the grand scheme of things, you know, PADF, we're at the beginning of our emissions reduction journey. And I know we have a lot to learn from you at the OES. Would you be able to share what has been the OES's journey to reduce emissions?
Of course, and first, that's great news and congratulations for this big step. No, it's something that when organizations start on this is just how we can get to that big goal and how many steps we can do in the path. For the OES is, I think the best way I can describe it is divided in two parts. No, the first area is where the leadership of the organization is more quick. No, so for example, actions that fall under the area are activities related to energy, the purchase of maintenance equipment. So that is more in the organization's responsibilities. The second area of actions are those in which the role of the staff is vital. Example of these area of actions are the recycling, the printing, or commuting program. No, that's a lot of weight on the staff to put or to get to those goals. At the OES, so before asking to the staff to take actions, we make sure that the organization overall operation are in line with our emission reduction goals. So in the building, we change the LED lights, we install electric charging station for the vehicles, we expanded garage storage for scooter and bicycles, and we installed rooftop solar. We installed a solar panel in our rooftop. So I think that has been like a long road. We set a goal to have 100% renewable electricity by 2022. So we did that, and next year we get to that goal. So as we made these changes, we shared this information with the staff and made them part of the process. So we received positive feedback and support from people. So we make all of this with support of the leadership, but at the same time, we make them part of the process. So when we start to make the actions that we need them, it was easy to make it part of this. So the first step for the staff was to start the Let's Recycle program, where personnel learn to separate waste to avoid contamination in recycling. So, but what's vital of the program was to removal of personal dusting and replacing them with color code bins that separate waste by type and key location of each floor. This was a big deal for some of the staff. It required people to change their behavior. But despite some initial concerns, we explained to people in a straightforward way how to adjust and ultimately receive the support of the staff.
That's awesome. No, those are really good examples of programs that the OAS has done. And thank you for sharing. I mean, this experience is so helpful. What really stood out to me from what you said is like the importance of bringing all the staff into the process. That sounds like such a vital part of the effort. And it also sounds like it took some work, but that helping everyone like recognize the importance of the programs, getting their feedback on the programs, helping them adapt to what might have been hard at first to do, really paid off in your efforts. I'm trying to think, like, if you have some lessons learned through the process of this like activating of each person that you can share, like what worked well and what didn't work as well.
Yes, perfect. And I think one of the best practices we found was the importance of communication. So communication is key. So we needed to make clear to people what we are doing first, why we are doing it, and how it affects them. So that's three questions, and the way we approached that three process was very important. So first, we share information through a digital flyer and video campaign, which was very successful. We also had a special kickoff day. So we set up information booths and went office to office explaining the program and answering questions. Another best practice we found for getting buy-in across the organization was to work closely with diverse teams, such as the facilities and procurement departments. It was important to show them the cost of savings that will result from cutting emissions. In terms of challenge we faced, I think in one moment, or we fell in a bit of a honeymoon phase at first, no? Things were going really well. We were focused on the low-hanging fruit, changes that were not that expensive and didn't require too much behavioral change, but COVID pandemic hit, we paused our communication initiative, so it was a little hard to stop, but we have to accept that COVID was not a good thing for us, but also led to a good pause and allow us to reflect. In that way, the pandemic has shown us new opportunities. For example, from internal analysis, we were able to identify that it is possible to reduce travel by 35%. That's a lot. So this can bring many benefits for the organization, including financial benefits, GHG emission reduction, and improved staff well-being.
Oh man, okay, the honeymoon phase. We gotta look out. Thank you. These are really helpful pointers for, I mean, any organization, but I know that this is going to be really helpful for us as well as we develop our internal processes over the next 6 months. So Daniel, I mean, thank you so much. This has been such a fruitful conversation and we're so grateful for your time. As a last thing, do you have any final suggestions about carrying out successful sustainability work that you'd like to share?
Yes, of course. And this is something that I really like. So my final recommendation is to find an effective way to get people on your side. So at my organization, we launched a recycling champion program. So we invite staff to volunteer and to help sensitize other colleagues to our new recycling program and brainstorming ideas for future sustainability initiatives. So we now have a strong group of dedicated champions who volunteer to take on projects and help us to buy in across the organization. At the beginning, it takes a little work to organize, but once you get people together, really great things can come out of it.
Oh, you know, this actually reminds me of a suggestion that I will leave as well. I know a great podcast episode that people can listen to if they want to learn more about effective internal organizing for sustainability projects, because I think that is a wonderful suggestion. The title of the episode is called How Amazon Workers Got Serious About the Climate and How You Can Too, by the podcast How to Save a Planet. And I will make sure to link that episode along with the link to this conversation when people listen. So Danielle, thank you so much. On behalf of all of PADF, I can say we are so excited to continue working with you and the OAS to become a more sustainable organization.
Of course, no. Thank you, Maya. It has been a pleasure and we're happy to have PADF and you as an ally in these efforts.